This show is a production of Migration Media. To learn more about us and see a complete list of our shows, visit migrationmedia.net.
From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Wherever people gather, you'll find music. This certainly holds true for migrant communities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the music being made in the places where you find migrants and expats finds its way into popular culture. In a world of streaming and niche audiences, you can find an amazing variety of musical styles and cross-cultural mashups to tickle your ears with. One genre that's still unheralded, however, is expat music. Case in point, Stevie Mac and the Mac Daddies is probably the most popular and successful party band in Beijing. Founded and led by Stephen McKinney, it's an 11-piece ensemble made up entirely of expats that was born out of the need that is common everywhere. People with the talent and skill need a way to express their passion for music. You'll find groups like them in every migrant hub, but beyond local clubs and bars, there really aren't any platforms for them to grow beyond their local audiences. But that doesn't keep Steve down. As successful as he's been as a band leader, for him, music is, like it is for most expats, a side hustle. After going to China on a lark, he co-founded and now runs a very successful kindergarten. His twin passions of music and being an entrepreneur have helped him fully embrace his unexpected expat life, and folks in Beijing can expect to see him leading his band for years to come. Steve is one of those folks who I kept bumping into when I lived in Beijing. And as he mentions during our chat, we found ourselves crossing paths most often at SantaCon, which is one of the most fun parties you can go to anywhere. It's a great way to meet other people, especially expats. He's a great guy, and I always enjoy the times when we got a chance to hang out. I think you're going to like him just as much as I do. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Stephen McKinney. Stephen McKinney, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Where is home?
Well, I'd say home is two parts, actually. I have two homes. One of them is actually, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. And so I'm actually consider myself a very diehard St. Louis person, like in a lot of ways, especially in regards to sports. I grew up spending a lot of time with my grandfather, and I love St. Louis sports, especially baseball. So I'm a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. I'd say St. Louis and North Louisiana, not South Louisiana, which is like associated with like the food and New Orleans and the culture.
Actually, when you came in today, I said no Cajuns, jokingly, like I'm not a Cajun. I didn't actually know you were from North Louisiana.
Yeah, North Louisiana. So the thing is people don't really know what North Louisiana is about.
And I was about to say, what is North Louisiana?
North Louisiana is basically, it just feels like, I want to say like...
Is it Arkansas?
It's like Arkansas. It really is. Okay. It's like southern Missouri and Arkansas. I mean, I grew up literally, I could probably stand in Arkansas and Louisiana at the same time, like right on the line. And it was a wonderful place, a small town. Basically, I lived in St. Louis, Missouri until I was 15. And then I moved south with my mom and stepdad. And so I went to high school and college in Louisiana. So I'm a mixture of Missouri and Louisiana, so that's pretty much home.
So you grew up in St. Louis, you said?
I grew up until I was about 15 years old.
That's basically moving from like the big city to the back country.
It really was. I mean, like I grew up in a city like Southside St. Louis, and then my mom met a wonderful man who was his family lived in Louisiana, and he wanted to be with his family, so we left a huge city to a small town.
Well, that's a migration right there. Yeah, what was that all about?
It was a culture shock, and that's the best way I can describe it. I went from like being able to see and do anything I wanted, and then just basically going to a place where they didn't even have a theater. I mean, it was just like that's what my life became.
You know, I remember I had an experience when I was in high school. I was in the Big Brothers Association, so I had this mentor, and he was in the military. He was in the Air Force, and he was stationed. I say stationed. He was at the JFK School of Government. He was in grad school. The Air Force sent him to grad school. And he eventually went to flight school, and we stayed in touch, and I went out to flight school. The flight school was in Enid, Oklahoma. Talk about small town, man. Yeah. It's basically the base. That's all it is. And then the people who live around the base, this small town. And I remember as a senior in high school going out there and I was there for like a week in Enid while he was finishing up his flight training. And on the weekend,
I asked him, like, what are we going to do? Like, where are we going to go? I grew up in the city of Austin. Like, what do we do? He goes, oh, the kids here, they go tooling. I'm like, what the hell is tooling? He says, oh, they just drive up and down the strip and yell.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That was basically high school for me on Fridays during right before football games. Like, we did the exact same thing. And it's so funny because being in China, people are like, well, where are you from? Like, well, I was born in St. Louis, but I came here from Louisiana. They're like, oh, yeah, what part? And like, there's no reason to tell you. You wouldn't know. I lived about 35, 40 minutes away from Shreveport, Louisiana, which what you may have heard of, but most people don't even know what Shreveport is. So like it's a small town.
Wow.
Small town.
That's a real whiplash. I got just the tiniest glimpse of it. And I just can't imagine having grown up there during high school, especially if I had gone from my big city, living in the big city, having access to museums. I used to go to the airport and just watch the people coming in. You know, it was like, this is before 9/11 and there was security. You could just go to the gates and look and see who was getting on the planes, right? So this is, I can't imagine going from that and then living in a town like that. It must have been crazy.
It absolutely was. And like some of the stories, like of actually growing up in Louisiana, the simplest stuff was our joys. Like basically it was like getting in a car and driving like down Main Street, going to Walmart and like hanging out and talking to friends in the parking lot, and then like going to like Sonic. Like, I don't know if you know what a Sonic is, but like just getting like an ice cream or something. That was like basically high school for me. It wasn't like, I mean, we had to drive 30 minutes just to go see a movie.
The simple things.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're like small town.
So how did small town Louisiana Steve end up in China?
Well, I graduated high school and then I went to college in Louisiana, and in Louisiana, it seems like most people don't want to leave their backyard. And I never had that mentality. And I think maybe that kind of comes from the fact that I actually grew up in a city. And then when you start in a city and then go to a small town,
there's a feeling of loss.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I knew I always wanted more, and I wasn't getting it from Louisiana. I love the people. I mean, it's a huge part of my life, and I do feel like I'm ingrained in that culture. But I always knew that I wanted more than that. So after college, I was actually in a relationship, and we both decided that we wanted to expand. So we went to Washington, D.C. She was getting her PhD there. So I moved to D.C. and I had no job, no prospects. I was basically just following the person I was with, had been with for, you know, 4 years. And I went there, and finding a job that I actually enjoyed was a struggle. And I think that actually, it was like almost like step one of how like things went south in my relationship. So like I went there and she's in school and I'm struggling to find work. And I started to lose myself. Like I felt like I was losing like my personality. I wasn't happy anymore.
You're basically a trailing spouse.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't happy. And I think it reflected in the relationship. And we started growing apart because the one job I did find was like overnight logistics at a Target. And like that was my life, and I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to do something other than that. And after my relationship ended, like there's basically clarity and crisis. And I was like, well, I've got to change. I got to do something. And luckily, I had a friend who had some connections to China. He's like, well, I have a friend who owns a school, and if you want to teach English, you just start fresh. Like this is the way to go. And I was like, sign me up, man. And that was pretty much how it started. And so I came to Beijing with a broken heart and just like, I'm starting over, I guess. So that's my story, how I came to Beijing.
The city of broken hearts.
Yeah, no kidding. And I feel like something drastic has to happen in your life for you to come to Beijing. For me, I feel like I've heard a lot of expat stories. And it's like, oh, you know, I wanted to learn Chinese. Or like, oh, I wanted to do this. But it usually just feels like, man, I didn't have anything, so I needed something new. I feel like I hear that story all the time. So.
Well, you know, the way I always think about it is Beijing is not a place you fall into. Beijing is not a place that you accidentally end up in. You have to make an affirmative choice. Like, you can accidentally end up somewhere in Europe. Like, you're like, oh, I did a study abroad, and, you know, I just kind of stayed, or I met a girl, or whatever. And that could happen here, but even the people who do study abroads in China, like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be really mission-driven to choose it, and it's not by chance that people end up in Beijing. I mean, my story, people will know, is that like I just heard a voice move to China. And what I kind of leave out of that story a lot is before I moved here, I actually took two trips before I moved here in February and April of 2008. I was actually scouting out where to go.
Right.
And I started in Beijing scouting around. I was like, oh, let me get the feel for the city, because I'd visited, but I didn't. It was never with an eye towards possibly moving there. So we need to figure out. And I knew someone who lived in Shenzhen, and Shenzhen is attractive because Hong Kong's right there. So you can kind of just cross the border. You can walk across and get on the subway, and you're in the, quote, the West again, and all this, everything makes sense. And Shenzhen is very up and coming and exciting city. So I actually took a couple of trips. I didn't know where I would end up. I just knew China. And then Beijing just seduced me. Like when I got here, actually on my second trip in April, as soon as I got to Beijing in April, I just knew, okay, this is it. Like yeah. My trip to Shenzhen was literally just, oh, let's go see what's there. Like, you know, I'll go hang out with the person I know. Like, I knew I wasn't living there. I'm going
to
move there.
I had to give up just basically everything to make the journey. I mean, I really did. I mean, I didn't know anything about China, in Beijing specifically. If you'd asked me at that time, like, well, what do you know about Beijing? I'm like, well, I know there's the Great Wall and I know there's pollution and that's it. And that's basically, I didn't speak a lick of Chinese, any Mandarin. And I just basically just up and left. I was like, I put all my eggs in one basket and just like, I'm going, I got to do something because this is not working for me.
So it's because you knew a guy here.
That's all it was. Basically a friend of a friend who owned a school, like a very small school. And I came here on a low salary compared to other teachers here. Like, and like, I was just...
But that's the foot in the door.
Yeah, I needed something new. And it was just, it happened so fast because I was literally, because like my friend was a Korean American. He was telling me to move to South Korea. And, but I was so desperate to get out. I was like, no, I need something now. I was like, well, this is now. So I was like, let's do it. Let's just do it. And that's basically how I came to Beijing.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
People in Beijing will know you as Stevie Mac.
Right.
And the Mac Daddies, of Stevie Mac and the Mac Daddies.
Right.
And this is a band.
Mm-hmm.
And can you describe what your band is?
Well, we are a...
Because it's a whole thing.
It is. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. It's an 11-piece pop rock band.
Polyphonic spree of Beijing or something.
I mean, people ask me where the inspiration came from. I mean, a lot of the Louisiana culture, actually, I think there you'll feel some of that in the Mac Daddies. We don't play jazz. We do like a Dixieland feel. Like we have one of the best renditions of like when the Saints go marching in. Like you'll find it in there. But
yeah, you got a big horn section.
Yeah. When I came to Beijing, like I don't think I was creating a new person. I think I was just becoming the person that I needed to be, that I wanted to be.
I tell people that I didn't need to come to China to find myself, yeah. But I didn't know that I found myself till I got here.
Exactly. And when I came here, I just wanted to do the things that made me happy. And and it didn't matter if I was good at it or bad at it. I just had to make myself happy.
So everything stripped away, all preconceived notions, all societal expectations. All of a sudden, anything you want is clear and possible.
Yeah. And when I came to Beijing, I was living in a closet. It was a bed closet. It was a closet with a bed and there was a desk, a TV that did not work. I shared a bathroom with 8 Chinese guys that I couldn't speak with because I didn't speak the language. And that was my life. And I lived in Zhongguansun, which was like close to Wadaoco. And I think I even listened to one of your podcasts and you're talking about like, you know, Wadaoco and how there's college students, there's foreigners there. And it was like 20-minute walk. And I was like, well, I started walking there and I just started getting involved in like karaoke and open mic. And I met all these musicians. And I mean, you know what you can do and you know what you can't do. And like, I actually started tapping into the things that I knew I could do well, which was singing. And like, I got back into it and it was at the base level. We're talking like open mics, karaoke. And I met somebody who played guitar. So we started doing busking on the streets and then
busking in Beijing.
Yeah, absolutely. In Wadaoco specifically, but we went to the Hutongs and we did it. Like it was just, went around Hohai and, I started at the very bottom. And
don't see that a lot. Actually.
Yeah, I know. And it caught on to a point where it's like, people actually want to listen to you sing, dude. Like you've got something. And, I just kept going on, but I did a lot of open mics, traveled around Beijing and just kept meeting new expats specifically who were basically, you know, musicians as well and had the same like-mind drive about wanting to make a band. I created a band that was kind of in jest. We just called ourselves the Avengers of Music and it was nothing, but it taught me how to book venues, like how to run a band. And then once I had that training or that understanding of it, I was like, okay, so what kind of band do I want? And then I knew, around that time I was listening to like Justin Timberlake and like this 2020 Vision Experience, and he had like this big horn section. And he was like, you could see he was the center of attention, and there was like secondary singers and like this horn section. And I was listening to Scott Bradley in the Postmodern Jukebox, and I was like, I want to bring this to Beijing. There's nothing like this. I mean, there are great bands here, but this is different in its own way. And I was like, I'm going to start this. And if you're almost like the Neil Armstrong of Beijing, the first one to step on the moon, the first one to do it, like the sky's the limit. And I think that like the Mac Daddies are unique in their own way. And when I started it, it caught on like wildfire.
So you said you started with one other person?
Well, it's kind of, that's
What's the so we know that now we know the Stevie Mac origin story. What's the Mac Daddy's origin story?
Okay, well, like I said, I was in the Avengers, which was my first band, and two of the Avengers actually came over to the Mac Daddy's, but I didn't plan it that way. There was only one person that I actually reached out to. Her name was Erin, and she played the saxophone. And I knew that I wanted horns in the band, so I came to her first. I was like, I think we can find the guitar player and bass and you know the basic rhythm section, but we need to start finding horns. But I want you to be a part of it. But then when I started talking about it, then the bass player in the Avengers is like, well, yeah, I want to be in it too. So that kind of took care of itself. But believe it or not, there are a lot of great musicians in the city, and they don't have an avenue to actually like display their talents. And it wasn't hard to find people who could play like saxophone or, trumpet, trombone. I mean, it feels like every time I lose a musician, there's always someone who can step up and take that role. The band is, we just celebrated our 4-year anniversary. I've had a different lineup every year, and each year just feels the same. So there are so many talented musicians in the city.
You said something very interesting about how you feel there's a lot of people with musical talent. They don't have avenues to express it. Mm-hmm. When you said that, it really resonated with me because I've had that feeling just going out to, I've been here long enough where I know people who own bars and venues and stuff. And I've gone out to some of these events and I've noticed sometimes I see people in the middle of the show, someone from the audience just jumping up to take over one of the instruments because they want to play.
Right.
And they, everyone knows each other. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yeah, I can play this song and let's get up and try it or whatever. And I remember, I'm kind of remembering this feeling that I would have. They'd be like, wow, there seems to be a lot of musicians here and there aren't a lot of bands. Like there are bands, but there's not this huge amount. Like there's the Chinese music scene. Mm-hmm. And that is, I've talked to my friend Bader, who is really into the Chinese music scene, especially the rock scene. And I'll put a note in the show notes. People could listen to that to learn more about the music scene in general. But in terms of the expat music scene, like, there's not a lot of mixing. You don't see a lot of these Chinese bands with foreigners in them.
No, you don't. Absolutely.
So it's almost like the business community where you might have one or two that have a foreigner in them, but really there's this kind of glass wall between that separates the foreigners and the Chinese bands. You'll have Chinese people in the foreign bands.
I have Chinese people in my band, absolutely.
But you won't see it the other way around.
Right.
That's an interesting phenomenon. And I'm wondering if you feel like there's a need for more outlets for these foreigners who, like you, come to China. No one's coming to China for music, but they come to China for something else.
Right.
But they have this part of themselves that also is dying for an outlet for expression.
Yeah. And I think one of the best ways, from my experience, is like you'll notice that there are a lot of open mics in the city. And I think that there are a lot of great musicians. They come together through that avenue. But you really do need to have one person be like, it's more than just, because it's not just about starting the band. It's more like you have to obviously start the band, but there's so much more to it. It's about going out and making the contacts, finding people to actually book you. That takes a lot of work. And I mean, it's sometimes either outside their skill set or it's just like people may not have the courage there's a lot more to running a band than simply just playing the instrument or singing a song. And I think you have to have at least somebody in the band who's willing to go around and like knock on doors or there are a lot of great musicians, but I think there might be fewer of is that there are the fewer people who are willing to like make that effort of like trying to get their foot in the door.
Yeah. And if people aren't actually coming here for music, they're coming here for some kind of job or something.
Absolutely.
Then you're splitting your time and you're splitting almost your identity somehow. I want to get a little bit more into that because you have another job too.
Sure.
And you're juggling your life. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that in just a moment. But for the minute, take a breath, have a glass of water, and we'll come right back.
Sure.
Hi everyone, want to hear more about the migrant lifestyle? I'm Michelle Ibarra and I want to give you the tools to live your best life overseas over at my podcast, Pop Abroad. Season 1 is all about global communities and the people who have created and nurtured them. Pop Abroad is also part of the Migration Media Network. You can find Pop Abroad at migrationmedia.net or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, we were talking about how it takes someone to do more than just play music to create this band, but people aren't coming to China for music. So you have to basically work two jobs if you want to start a band. You got your band, which if you're the leader is a job.
Sure.
If you're a musician, you still got to rehearse, that's a job.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to play gigs, that's a job. But you got to do your job.
Right. And it's so funny, even before we like talk about my other job, like just in regards to when people, because you hit the nail on the head. When people come to Beijing, they're not coming to do music. And most musicians are under contract anyway. It's really, it just becomes a hobby. And if you do it right, it can become a very successful hobby, which is exactly what the Mac Daddies are. It's not my job. I mean, it has become a job, but it really just started off as like, this is going to be a fun hobby that I'm going to put work into. And then
you guys really hit it though. I mean, you play a lot of gigs, and there's some of these bands, they're like hardworking bands.
Yeah. We always do this, you know, anniversary show. So we just celebrated our 4-year anniversary, and I always do what's called a huddle. So I bring everybody together before a show, we put our hands in and we talk. And this is something I actually said to them last month when we celebrated our 4-year anniversary. Things just work. Sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle. You don't know how it's going to happen. It just does. I mean, there are great musicians. There are great bands in the city. They're amazing. But for whatever reason, like, it's almost the Mac Daddies is actually, I feel like, turned into some of the expat Bayesian culture. People may not recognize my face, and there's a good chance they won't. But if I say, hey, I'm Stevie Mac, if Stevie Mac and the Mac Daddies, like, I know that band. Like, and that's really what it's become. It's just, we've gotten very, very popular, but it really stems from just, for whatever reason, the chemistry works. The music's good. You can tell that we're like a family on stage. We have fun. It's just some of those elements that we got lucky with. You can't plan it. It just happened. And that's just the way it worked out. And I'm blessed for that. And I'm thankful for it as well.
So while this is going on, you're also, you said you came over here to start teaching. And this right. is not, this has not abated. This profession has not abated.
No, I'm just very much immersed in it.
But you're not just teaching anymore. You're right. actually running a school.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about how that happened? How did you go from, I need to get out of here and I'm going to land in Beijing, live in a closet and teach English, to now I run my own kindergarten?
Well, when you've hit rock bottom, you can only go up from there. So that's pretty much what it was. It was just like, depression. I mean, I was depressed in America. That's the best way I can describe it. I mean, getting up and getting out of bed was that was a job for me. And I could see just getting up and going to work, like my work was slipping. Like, you could just tell that I needed something. It was either like accept this as my life, or like, you know, give myself a shot to the chest and do something. So for me, living in a closet was preferable to actually just being in America.
I was about to say, maybe that's a step up.
Yeah, it was. So like, I mean, I remember it vividly, just being in that bedroom, that closet bedroom, and sitting on the bed and just be like, well, this is it. This is what you basically invested in. You can only go up from here. So you got to do it right. So I just worked, man. That's all I did. I didn't care what it was. I had my the teaching job, which was an after school program. So I basically had my days from like in the morning till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon to myself. But from basically Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday, I was working 7 days a week. And instead of just accepting that as my 7 days a week job, I just took on more work. And that was how I got my foot in the door with teaching. But because there were other schools that were looking for teachers, I took every job I possibly could. And I managed to meet a really great person, a Beijing local who was starting a school. And she needed a lot of help, and she didn't have the right teachers. The teacher that she did have was just basically bleeding money. She wasn't doing she couldn't get students. She wasn't doing the job right. And I came in, I was like, look, you know, I'll really help you if you let me invest and be a part of it. And that's, you know, let me be a partner. And as they say, the rest is history. I worked for the first year and a half. I'm not even kidding. 7 days a week working. And even after that, I'd get off work around 8, and then I just go to do open mic, and I literally wouldn't get home until like midnight sometimes. So the first year and a half especially was just work, 7 days a week. And 5 years later, I'll celebrate 6 years in a few months, but I own my own business with two business partners. And I can say that I'm 100% happy now, which was my biggest achievement about coming to Beijing.
You said you have two locations now?
Yes, two locations. We started off as a small apartment, and we had maybe 4 kids. It was not good. And I came in after she had already kind of started the school, but you could see it wasn't working. There was like 4 kids. I came in and then I started doing demos and more kids came. But there are opportunities here. You just have to seize them and you have to be willing to work. And that's basically what I did for almost 2 years, with 7 days a week, long, long days.
Are you a teacher or are you a musician?
Can I be both? That's what I consider myself to be.
It was kind of a trick question. I wanted to see if you would struggle to pick one, but sick, you know, wanting to be both is totally valid.
Well,
but
this is the best way I can describe it. I am a musician. I love it. It's my passion. It's more than a hobby. I can't say it's a hobby because it absolutely is a passion. And I think it even shows, like, you know, even in Beijing, like Stevie Mac and the Mac Daddies actually mean something to the city. So it is definitely more than just being, it's not a hobby. It's a passion. Yes, I'm a musician, but I do see that nothing lasts forever in this city. I mean, I my band is full of expats and they leave all the time. And I already said it that like I have a new band lineup every year. Every year that I've had the band, I've had a new lineup because people leave. Luckily, I've been able to replace them with great musicians. But sooner or later, the well is going to run dry. Expats are going to leave, and that band is not going to last forever. And when that happens, I have to be able to have other priorities, and the school is just as important to me. So right now, I care about my school and my band, but I do know that like the school feels much more stable, as where like the band is like, I'm living the good old days now. I know that. And sooner or later, the Mac Daddies will end, and hopefully my school won't.
The world is riddled with these kind of local institution bands and one or two people there, then, you know, members cycle in and out all the time.
Right.
And I could see that happening with the Mac Daddies. I mean, I was in Beijing for 11 years and I almost can't even remember a time when there wasn't a Mac Daddy. And it's just so funny that it's only been 4 years.
Yeah,
for you.
We just celebrated 4 years, but I'm thankful for it. And I hope that it lasts a long time. I mean, I will do it until the wheels fall off. It really just depends on whether or not the stars align and I can keep replacing musicians. Because at the end of the day, we have to have a horn section. We have to have those secondary singers, and there has to be a want for it. Luckily, the name stands out. So if there is an opening with the Mac Daddies, there always seems, oh, the Mac Daddies, I want to be a part of that. So I have that now. But I can't see what the future is. But I will tell you that I will try to keep the band going as long as I can.
Feels like community. One of the things that communities need is an art scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about being an expat in Beijing is that a lot of people either live in a bubble or there's some level of sequestering from the actual Chinese culture. Like there's, like we talked about before, there's very, very few foreigners who cross over into the Chinese music scene. There's the other way, but the other way almost doesn't work. So it's kind of like this weird parallel universe where we as the expat community need to create our own arts culture. And these bands that pop up kind of serve that purpose. That's the feeling I get. And when we were talking about the Mac Daddies being kind of this, potentially being this institution that mm-hmm. people always want to cycle in and out of, like, oh, I'm in town, there's this band I can be a part of.
Yeah.
But there are some other bands like that. And do you see... I mean, do you have that feeling about other bands that are out there? I mean, you can name drop if you want, but there are a few that come to mind, like the Hot Cat Club mm-hmm. and Tavy Lean and the Solid Gold Dream Machine. You know, there are these bands that are just seem to be always there.
Right.
And I feel like, yes, there's like one person or one or two people that anchor it, but I feel like we've kind of gotten to the point where we have these institutions now. Do you feel that way about Beijing?
I do. And, you know, I'm actually thankful that the Mac Daddies have actually become one of those institutions. Like, but you're absolutely right. Solid Gold, Hot Club, the Hunters, their lineup has changed many, many times and they're still here, which is, I think, which speaks volumes about them. The one thing I noticed about the music scene in Beijing is that they're actually, it's almost like not only just different genres, but there are kind of like different tiers. I feel like there actually are, I hope the band doesn't get mad at me for me saying this, but that are more talented than us. They approach it in a different way. Like, but you'll see these super, super talented musicians that like, they don't do the same. They don't do the party venues. And I think like,
I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to say it, but I have to say like Hot Club is a little, they're very refined, but you guys have enthusiasm.
Yeah.
They're, you know, it's like a different thing.
It absolutely is. And I won't say we're not professional because we are. We are. Like we've played for Yao Ming. I mean, that tells you like we've
played for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was at a wedding.
We've seen some really cool stuff. We've done we played at embassies, like these huge galas, these balls, these amazing parties. But like we are a party band, and we're designed for a very specific purpose. And people like to party, so everybody knows about the party, right? So, but there are people that play jazz. There's so many amazing jazz bands in the city that don't get even the same amount of recognition that the Mac Daddies do. I will say this, admittedly, they're way more talented in a lot of respects, but I think that we hit a niche, which is the same niche that like Solid Gold hits, the Hunters hits. You hear about these bands because they're very involved in the social aspect of Beijing, the parties, and that's really how you know them most. But
it drives a lot of the culture and community here is that party scene.
Right. So there, like I said, there are the party bands. There are the bands that are like super talented, but they're more like you'll see them at the jazz bars, a little more divey area sometimes. But then also there's like the musicians that are just starting. They're like they played like they'll play for exposure. I mean, they're super talented too. There are a lot of great bands in the city, and a lot of them are expat bands. There's just different exposures, if that makes sense. I mean, they're just not different tiers, but just different ways of presenting yourself. And I think that like Mac Daddy's are basically involved in the social scene, and I think that's where we're famous.
I had this moment. I was in Shanghai recently, and I was at a little bar. It's actually called the Tipsy Fiddler. I'll name drop. It's a cool little Irish pub in a residential area. It's not surrounded by a lot of clubs and social stuff.
Yeah.
But they had a Bob Dylan night one night, and I would just happen to be there, and it was kind of, I had a flashback. I was at this club, this bar, and there are these random people coming up, and apparently there's this new kid who's in town, and he's got a voice like an angel. Man! And all the girls are swooning over him, and he's been here for 9 months, you know?
Right.
And he didn't come for music, he came for something else, but he's this talent, right? And then a couple of songs later, this other guy comes up, and he's a Chinese guy, but he apparently went to Juilliard. Everyone's like, he went to Juilliard. Oh my God, this guy, I forget his name, but he's just one of those people that everyone in the music community knows because mm-hmm. he's a serious effing musician.
Right.
You know, like top of his game, probably plays in bands and orchestras and whatever. And he gets up and he's playing the mandolin, and he is just killing it. I mean, he's so good, right? Objectively, me, someone who doesn't know music very well, right. I'm like, that guy's good.
Right.
Right, you know? And the reason I'm talking about this is because I'm having this flashback to this trip I went to in Chicago. And when I was at this blues club and this blues bar, and this woman gets up and she's playing, and it's like a Monday night. Like, there's nobody there. There's like four people. And this woman comes up, and the four people who are there besides me and my buddies, like, just start cheering crazily for this woman. And, you know, I ask one of the guys later on, I'm like, who is that woman? She's really good. Really good. She goes, oh, this is, I forget her name. I wish I remember her name. But she, oh, this is so-and-so. She used to DJ on like NPR, the local NPR station. She did like their blues show. Huh. And apparently she comes and plays sometimes. And one time she was here and Jimmy Page was in the audience, and he was so blown away by her, he got up after her set and asked her, can you come on and can I play with you?
Wow.
Because she's that good. And it's kind of those things where it's like a local legend, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a little dive bar, and you get a little flavor of that in these bars in Beijing or Shanghai, whatever, because the community is so small,
right?
And the people who cycle through are so talented, and you're going to have these little moments where you're like, oh, this guy's like world class, and I'm in some dive bar. Like, that can happen here.
Yeah. And I actually consider myself like, I'm a strong proponent about like promoting the Beijing music scene. Like, it's not just about just having my own band, but I will talk about all the bands in the city and say, hey, check out these guys. Every weekend, I don't stay at home. Like, I go out, like, and I will listen to hopefully a different band every week if I can, but I do have my favorites, but I'm always going to the music venues and listening to, and sometimes I'm just like, holy crap, these guys are way better than us, but they don't get the same name recognition. I'm just like, oh my God, there's just so many amazing bands, like so much talent, and they're all foreign bands, and they're just, and it's from all over the world. It is not, I mean, I always see things from the perspective of like, oh, you know, America has this great music scene, but like last week I listened to a French band, and it was called Mademoiselle, I think, something like that. And I was like, oh my God, it's like gypsy French music, and it's so good. But there's so many amazing bands in the city, and I can't stress that enough.
So how do you foster that? How do you support that? So you have your band. Like,
sure.
What do you think the city needs? And we're going to talk about Beijing because that's where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But this would go for any community. Like, if you have a city full of foreigners, mm-hmm. migrants, how does that community foster, support, elevate, interact with artists like yourself? What should they do beyond just going to the, like, do they have to demand from the venues? How does that work?
I can only speak from my own experience. This is my opinion. I think that the Beijing music scene needs leadership. And what I mean by that is somebody who has the stones, willing to step up and say, not only just have the band, because a band is a family, it's a culture. I mean, you hear stories about how bands fall apart because there's not this like that one person that can keep things moving, or just having that family unit where you realize that like the things you say can't be taken too personally.
Don't pull a Fleetwood Mac.
Right, right, exactly. So you have to have somebody who is, and I'm going to be honest, in the band, the least talented person in the band is me. Like, my music theory is subpar compared to everybody else. I can read music, I can sing, I can play a little piano, a little guitar, but I'm not like an instrument proficient in any way. But the one thing that I do well that seems to resonate with the band is that I'm able to be the big brother or the father figure and just keep the band on task. Not lit. Like, if there's problems arise, and they arise all the time, and I said, we're a big band, so that's 11 people. And one of my biggest jobs is just being able to regulate 10 different personalities with different opinions. And you have to have somebody who is, I don't know, somebody who has the courage and not be afraid of actually stepping up and taking that role and learning that role and be okay with failing, because I failed a lot. But I learned a lot from it. So
you need someone to do that community wide, not just the band.
I think people need, if they're listening, I would suggest just don't be afraid to step up into that role, because there is a dire need for it, because there's so many great musicians that, and they may be different personalities and different talents. But if you're good at something, but what I think a lot of people need is somebody willing to step up and like guide and be a leader. And one of the things that I've done as far as like being a leader and not, you know, not just in my band, but like in the Beijing music community, is I've started my own like small little thing. It's like, I call it Mac Productions Beijing. I'm basically always doing like different concerts and shows to like get the name out for bands and just to kind of spread the word. But that's
create just, events that yeah. other bands that come and attach themselves to. You're the party people,
right?
You want to also help expose your party crowd to these other talents that you're seeing,
right? And I mean, you do it in a lot of ways for a different few reasons. Not only just to like, you know, create a show which bands can actually display their talent, but also, I mean, use it as a way to raise money for like philanthropy. Just a few months ago, I'd done Notes for Charity, which was a way to like get bands together to play and use that as an outlet to raise money for, you know, for charity, obviously. So.
Can you make money at this? Can you make a, I mean, I know in the US or in the West or in, you know, in your native culture, there's always this feeling, there's always this understanding about musicians and it's a hard life and everything, but right. You guys almost to a person are doing it as your side gig,
right?
So you kind of don't have that pressure of, well, we have to be able to make a living at this or we can't do it, and you know, mm-hmm. you're not tortured artists,
right?
So I mean, maybe you're tortured, but you're but I mean, you're not tortured artists in the sense that you got to do this to eat. So do you feel like that is one of the reasons there are so many great musicians, because they don't have to struggle? Or do you feel, or should I say, do you feel like if you could, or if you needed to, or if you wanted to, you could switch off the other thing you're doing and just do this and make a go at it?
It's something I contemplate all the time, and people ask me why I don't do it. And I do believe that, yes, I think there is a market for it and you can make money. We have 11 people in our band. We could play every weekend if we wanted. I'm sure that there'd be a hotel or place that would actually put us under contract and we would absolutely make money. But with that many people and actually going into it as a hobby, like, you know, something more of a passion, and we don't need to make money, as you said. So, I think if it was a smaller band, you could absolutely make quite a bit of money, especially there actually are a lot of festivals and like ways to tour through China and actually make a lot of money. And it's something I would love to do. I'd love to play outside of Beijing, but the Mac Daddy specifically are a Beijing band, because there's so many people, it'd be too hard to like tour and do those things. If we wanted to, yes, I think that we could make money. I don't think it's practical in terms of the fact that like we approach it more as like a passion hobby kind of thing.
I mean, people aren't here for that.
Yeah, but I've actually seen bands who actually do go on a tour and they actually do travel and they actually do make money off of it. So it under the right circumstances, yes, I think so.
So you've got a nice balance right now. You've got your business.
Sure.
You've got your business that you're building that's starting to hit a little bit of success. You've mm-hmm. got your band that is not a business, but, you know, makes a little bit of drinking money maybe. And it's a nice success that's going on. So how long are you going to keep at this?
Well, as I said, I'll go until the wheels fall off if I can. I have no immediate plan to leave Beijing. We were talking a little bit earlier. It's very important to me. I don't want to give it up. I want to keep it going as long as possible. And the same thing with my business. It's actually starting to make money. It's starting to be profitable. We continue to grow every year. And I'm hitting I guess it's over 5 years, so I guess I'll be hitting the 6-year mark soon. So,
you've made it over the hurdle, man.
Yeah, so I don't think that I'm going to be leaving in the next couple of years for sure. I mean, you never really know, but if all things go well, hopefully the Mac Daddies will be here 2 years later. My business will be going to, you know, doing well 2 years later. So, no immediate plans to leave. I think I'm more micro goal oriented as opposed to long term goals. I try to take steps at a time as long as I feel like I'm moving forward. But for now, I think 2 years is realistic.
So before we wrap up, I want to kind of bring this full circle, because this podcast is a lot about identity, and you've talked a lot about the success you've had, the hard work that you've gone through to get here. When you came here, you were down in the dumps, and it's a great story. You know, it's the China dream,
yeah.
as maybe Xi Jinping would say.
Right.
but I guess you know, you don't, in that situation, you don't have a vision for yourself in 5 years, right? You're not in that closet saying, you know, in 5 years, I'm going to have a band and I'm going to have a school. Like, that's not what's happening. So I guess what I'm asking is, do you feel like the person you were or the dreams that you had for yourself, even though they may have been different, do you feel like you are fulfilling who you are through all this stuff? And do you feel like you could have done it without coming to Beijing?
I am the person that I'm supposed to be. I know that every morning I wake up happy. And obviously, you know, I have my bad days and my good days, but I generally, and I'm blessed and lucky to feel this way, I wake up and I'm happy to be here. And I don't think that I would be nearly this happy if I were in America. And that's kind of sad to say, but I feel being in China, having made that journey, that trip, and taking the risk is worth its weight in gold. It paid for itself. The life that I lived. And as I said, you know, I grew up in a small town in high school and college, and like I'll post things on social media and my friends are like, holy crap, are you seeing what this guy's doing now? And it's not just the fact just being in China. It's just like, because on my free time, I'm traveling and I get to go around and I've been to, you know, all over the world, and that I would not have been able to do that had I stayed in America. So I would strongly encourage you all to go out and see the world and take chances.
Well, man, that's awesome. Steve, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy with your school and your music, and just thank you for sharing your story with us.
Of course. And if I could just say one last thing before I go, I just want to say that when I first came here, I actually met you. You wouldn't remember, but I wanted to say that, like, I came to SantaCon in 2013 and I actually saw you there, and because we have a friend with Josh Lally, and I was like, I thought you were a really cool person, and it's just really cool. Like, you know, a few years later, we were able to work together in SantaCon and be a part of it. So it's actually an honor to be here, and I'm glad that you asked me.
That's awesome, man. Thanks. That means a lot.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Please check out the show notes for links to more information about my guest and to reach out with questions, feedback, and interview suggestions. Don't forget to subscribe and to leave us a like on your favorite podcatcher. Migratory Patterns is a production of Migration Media and is executive produced by me. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Migration Media production. To learn more about the lives of international migrants and see our lineup of shows, visit us at migrationmedia.net or look for us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.